everyone to Earth Harmony Divinations on this Windy Wednesday, January 7, 2009. Thanks for tuning in. Elizabeth here. This is our first show in 2009. Happy New Year, everyone. Having said that, I do not really ascribe to the drum of this most disturbing and confusing timepiece called the Gregorian calendar. Along with most other calendars forcefully manufactured by some Roman emperor, this calendar was created to keep humanity in a time warp or dream spell. Even most of the lunar calendars that we inherited from ancient cultures, such as the Chinese Xia calendar, which I use in my prediction work, even those calendars are slightly off the galactic timekeeping. So, well, as of now, humanity is still caught in a dream spell. And many of us are feeling the shift now. We're feeling that we can't keep up with this artificial time much longer, especially around this time of year. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. This could be a topic for some other show entirely. Let's get on with the show. If you're new to our Earth Harmony, our mission is simple, quite simple. Let us focus on sharing joy, oneness, abundance, gratitude, and self-awareness. Let's be ethical and use intuition, not fear. And the most important one, use the currency of love, the only key ingredient for ascension. Let's begin with the abundance intent. Take a deep breath and focus on the third eye. I focus on the holy high self within as the only source of my prosperity. I know this inner presence as the only activity in my affairs, as it is the substance of all things visible. I trust in the principle of abundance in action within and without. And so it is. Today I have the great honor to have as a guest with us the world-renowned alternative research expert and great mystic, and my secret mentor, and he doesn't know this yet, Michael Tsarian, the teacher of teachers, which I also call him that, who greatly inspired and inspires my work and many others, I'm sure. And I learned so much from his great body of research. It truly humbles my spirit. Michael needs little introduction, and for more information, please visit all of his websites, or at least the two main ones. He has many blogs and forums, and you can start with visiting the taroscopes.com website, taroscopes.com, or michaeltsarian.com. Michael Tsarian is a divination scholar and sidereal mythologist. He is the creator of the archetypal stereoscopic astrology system of Hermetic divination and founder of the online Stereoscopic Mystery School. Educated in the Krishnamurti tradition, he has taught indigo children at the New Age Academy in Berkeley, California. Michael is the author of Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation, and I urge you to pick up his book on that, especially it's like the basic foundation work to many of his other works. He gives life-changing classes and presentations on divination, hermetics, ancient civilizations, secret societies, astrotheology, symbol literacy, and the subversive use of sacred symbolism in the media. His acclaimed series of High Windows articles have appeared in the Psychic Reader since early 2000. I love his great DVD series. They are unparalleled in scope and depth. And the material they cover is, I don't think there is much else out there that is so overreaching into so many areas of human history. I hope you do take the time and visit his beautiful online pages. They are truly amazing. So if you always wanted to ask him on one of the enlightening subjects he discusses in his lectures, here is your chance. Please feel free to call in with questions, comments, anytime during this show. Well, welcome, Michael. So good to have you here in virtual cyberspace.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Elizabeth. Appreciate your invitation. It's nice to be with you.
Sorry we were late, and I hope that you are not too tired. I know you just had a show before us.
Yeah, we had a two-hour show, interview with Josh Reeves, but no, it's okay. I knew many days ahead that we're going to do interviews, so I'm fine. I had some deed.
Oh, good. You're a true professional, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us. And before we begin, I have so many questions. I know we won't have time for too much, but would you like to share with us any new emerging views or ideas on your latest work? And, of course, in light of the current world events, what is on the top of your list at the moment?
Well, about 2-3 weeks ago, the planet Pluto moved into Capricorn. It has, since about 3 months ago, it's been going back and forth. In fact, during the whole of 2008, Pluto has moved into Capricorn, then went back retrograde into Sagittarius, you see, a couple of times, back and forth like that. And then about 2-3 weeks ago, it went in there permanently, and it's going to remain there for about 13 years. So this then basically accelerates what I've been talking about, is the age of revealing, age of awakening, which very much ties into the countdown to 2012 scenario. Whether you come at that from the Maya, you know, tradition, what they've been saying, or whether you come from the Vedic tradition, or whether you come from a traditional Western astrology, but it doesn't really matter what kind of tea leaves you're looking at. The point is what the tea is revealing, you know. So it doesn't matter if it's Taifu tea or PG tips or some exotic brand of tea, you know, to take the metaphor, is that when you're reading the tea leaves, it doesn't matter what kind of tea leaves it is. It's the message that comes about. So we have different systems throughout the world. We have different traditions. But the story of the stars does not lie, you know. So it's not just so much important about the calendar as we know it in a material sense. It's not even about time as we know it in a material sense, which appears to be cyclical or circular, you know, the Monday to Friday, the Monday to Sunday. We're talking, you know, astrological archetypes here, and it's very important for people to be tied into what that exactly means on an archetypal level. And I think that this Pluto moving into Capricorn is going to help that. It's going to help astrologers, people who are even into this information, and even those who are maybe getting involved, to understand that when we're talking about the stars in the heavens, we're not talking about some sort of magic rays. We're not talking about some sort of physical phenomena here that's not been proven yet. It's probably not likely to be proven yet. And that's because, you know, in my work, I approach it from a pretty much a Jungian point of view, from an alchemical point of view, that the external bodies only represent what is really happening within the psyche of man. When we want to study this subject scientifically, what we need to be thinking about is the connections between the microcosm and the macrocosm. We need to be talking about the psychic realm and how it connects to and changes the material realm. This is a metaphysical subject that science has yet to catch up on. But the beauty of it is that with these changes, with Pluto especially going into Capricorn, tremendously antithetical energy there on one level, because of course Saturn's about structure and order and karma and practicality, and Pluto is about the psychic and the spiritual and the deconstructive. So on one level there's going to be a lot of amazing revelations being made, because Pluto is like that black light that helps. It's like that infrared light that shows what's behind the scenes. It brings up a lot of dirt. It doesn't cause the dirt. It just shows up the dirt that's already there. But the other good side of Pluto going into Capricorn is that it is now going to assist those people who've been trying to do that all along. It's going to assist people in getting deeper in their consciousness, deeper in their mentality. It's going to help the spirit of rebellion so that people start, you know, like the way I describe it, is falling in love with the word no. Their tolerance level for the lie is hopefully going to be less as opposed to more. And so there's some very, very positive things, and I am now looking at that every day. You know, of course, there'll still be important astrological milestones as we move down towards 2012, but this one really is the biggest one. There's been several even in the past since we crossed the millennium. The Maya have talked about some. There's been a few others of importance, important conjunctions and important astrological milestones. But to me, this one with the planet Pluto, you know, moving into Capricorn, to me is absolutely vital. The first 3 to 4 years of its cycle, it stays in Capricorn for about 13 years. So, of course, what we do is we divide that by 3 to get the mini cycles. And so we're already talking 3+ years. My goodness, what does that do? That takes us right down to 2012. So even in the very first triad of the transit of Pluto, we're already talking about the countdown to 2012 right there. So as I said, again, it's got an anabolic level, it's got a catabolic level, it's got a constructive level, but it's also got a deconstructive action. And people are going to have to get with that. They're going to have to get okay with that deconstruction. Americans are not normally very good with that. It's all about building and getting and wanting and owning and having and acquiring, even in spiritual terms. the whole Shiva aspect of breaking down, letting go, sacrifice and abstinence, and letting go of the false and of seeing behind the surface. That's not generally been the way that the American psyche works. Well, now it's going to have to learn to be like that. It's going to have to adjust. People are going to have to adjust their settings and get okay with this more Shiva action, because it's absolutely vital. It's part of the natural cycle. It's nothing to be afraid of. And that's what I'm looking to right now, to see on one side that people are not able to do that and they're going to be in big trouble psychically and in physical life as well and in relationships. And on the other side, the people who can get with that, who start to peel off all these dead selves and this lower aspect of their consciousness and go through amazing changes, really revolutionary stuff that today they probably would never tell you or believe that they would go through. So to me, it's a tremendous time right now.
Tremendous. And this was going to be my first question for you, and you already answered it, because you mentioned the mask is coming down. Apocalypse is really a Greek word for, which means leather covering. And so this is the mask you're talking about. This actually truly means the human skin. That we're going
I think
to see
so.
What's beneath that. So should we be optimistic that this age finally will bring us closer to selfhood, Michael?
You should be realistic. I don't necessarily believe in optimism or pessimism, because those are two extremes. I think what people need to do is if they can just get to the level of being realistic, that would be incredible. And, of course, I do address people in the metaphysical community there, because a lot of times you'll find that people, even though they're well-meaning and they are up to speed on so many good things, by being part of the New Age movement and some of these other things, they can often tend to be in a tremendous amount of escapism as well.
Yeah.
There is that danger. I don't want to belabor the point, but people need to look into their own lives and find out, you know, what kind of escapism may be operating in their lives as well. I mean, this goes for the whole of the public. It will be helped also by the Pluto coming in, because Pluto is essentially about reality. It's also about the reality that's below reality. This is why I'm so happy about it, because it does deal with the psychological. The psychological is important, whether you're dealing with the war on consciousness or whether you're even dealing with, you know, the question of the meaning of life, whether you're dealing with who we are, what we are, why we're here, where we're going, where we've come from, all of those important questions. Pluto assists in that process. Now, the people who are running away from asking any of those questions, who are running into escapism, who are running into false religions and false paths, in exactly the same way as people will run to alcohol and to sugar and to gossip and to, you know, all sorts of other distractions, drugs, pharmaceutical or other, well, you see, those people have, who are not asking those questions, they're going to have it like a sort of a Twilight Zone thing, and where that question is going to keep on looming on the head, on the road in front of you. It's not a time for escapism. So people who think that they can keep on running away into whatever, you know, inauthentic mode of life are going to be shocked to find the same specter of truth arriving on the road in front of them. So we don't need to hard sell anything. We don't need to force anyone into anything. Universal energy, the universal intelligence is already dealing with that. Pluto is that voice that no one can ignore. It's going to come into the most personal areas of your life. That's what it means by going into Capricorn. When Pluto, just to speak astrologically, when Pluto's in its own sign of Capricorn, perhaps, or when it's in Sagittarius, which is somewhat compatible to a certain degree, you know, we don't feel its energy anything like the way we're going to feel it now. When it moves into a very antithetical sign like Capricorn, we will feel its effects even more. So it's not a matter of being optimistic or pessimistic. It's a matter of fact of just noticing that it's like the hands of a clock. You know, it's that predictable. It's that certain.
Yep.
And so people now have a major choice to make about whether or not they're going to be with that energy or against it.
Yes, so they go into fear-mongering, and they actually feed into the fear-mongering around this. So that way they actually hindering their own ascension and their own enlightenment.
And there's also people who are not going to be ascending. You see, Plato and Socrates were saying to any of the symposium, the people, the young men who were asking the questions, a lot of the questions were based on, hey, Socrates, tell us what it is to be enlightened. And one question was even, hey, what's it like to be enlightened? I mean, tell us all about it. Tell us about what it's like on the other side, or tell us what it's like to be, you know, in the company of the gods and whatnot. And Socrates said to them, I have the problem of just getting you people from the subhuman level, and I don't like to use the word animalistic because I don't believe animals are stupid or backward, so I prefer to use the word humanly primitive or humanly backward. He would say, I've got the devil of a time getting you from the subhuman level merely to the human level is enough job. Forget what is from the human to the angelic or the spiritual. Can we just deal with getting you out of the most backward, primitive level first before you start worrying about, you know, this other sort of reality up there? You're not sensitized enough to see it. Even if you tried to force yourself to see it, meaning force yourself to be sensitized to see it, you'd probably end up insane. In exactly the same way today is that people have noticed that they're still living in the city. There's only so much detoxing you can do before you're assaulted by all the stuff of the city, and then you're thinking you're doing a good job by making yourself detoxified. Yeah, well, that works okay if you're living in the beautiful countryside, or, you know, you're living in the hills of the Swiss Alps or whatever, you know, or the beautiful Irish countryside. You know, you can continue to purge and purify right to a very high degree. But anyone who's tried fasting to an extreme level or detoxifying will suddenly realize that that can actually backfire.
Yeah.
When you're living in a very toxic environment. And so, you see, this is why we have the same problem today. As I said, Pluto will assist with this detoxification process. But also, you can't hurry it. You cannot move too quickly into it as well. You have to have tremendous self-love. You must not be self-critical. Must not, you know, be trying to do it in an acquisitive way, which is a lot of times what people are doing spiritually. You know, there's so many factors involved in this process.
Well, in your 2006 lecture, which I re-listened to over and over, you went into great detail on what enlightenment really should be understood. I agree wholeheartedly. I believe it truly means complete detachment, meaning becoming lighter and lighter so we reach the highest, most powerful inner essence of selfhood. So do you think returning to selfhood equals ascension? The ascension process is one of the same.
Could you repeat that last part?
Do you think that returning to selfhood and ascension is one and the same? You know, I believe that what we need to be doing is detach, detach, detach to become lighter and lighter, which is what you referred to in your lecture, that enlightenment really is the physical feeling of lighter, being lighter and lighter.
Yes, I do. I think that some of these terms are very loaded. I can only talk about the selfhood aspect, because the man who is not in selfhood, first of all, is not even capable of choosing whatever road, path, philosophy, tradition he is interested in. So in other words, like for instance in the Vedic tradition, they talk about the deer who goes around the tree trunks smelling the musk that it already has in its own body. So, you know, this is what we're doing. We're drinking different tea from different cups. And so too much of that exploration of the outer world, too much sitting under the mushroom, sitting at the feet of gurus, expecting some other force external to you, even if that implies a god, it can be very, very, you know, negative as far as I'm concerned. And I believe that the road back to selfhood is essential. At that point, when the person has become self-aware, self-conscious, in a truly, you know, in a true state of being, which our whole societies are against, you see.
Yeah.
But when a person comes to that level of sovereignty, then basically the rest of us need to check out. We cannot then tell or know what kind of a spiritual fragrance that person will emit. You know, just as many life forms as there are in nature, mm-hmm. just as many seasons, colors there are in a season. You know, at that point, the spiritual effervescence will be unique to that individual. It is not going to be secondary. It's not going to be borrowed. It's not going to be something that another person may recognize. The journey to selfhood is something that leads you to yourself, and then from that place, you discover exactly what your destiny is meant to be, and your spiritual coloring, your spiritual complexion will be different. It will be very individualistic. What we have today is too much of this institutionalized spirituality, spirituality by numbers, spirituality by sects and paths and all of this. You know, I come out of like the Krishnamurti tradition in which, you know, Krishnaji said the truth is a pathless land and you must be wary of any particular person or philosophy that says that we have it down. You know, we have the way, we have the truth, we have the light. As we move more into the Aquarian setup, and Pluto, of course, is a way shore to this, a door opener for that. People will start to get that. People will not need to be told. They'll start to work it out for themselves. That, you know, I think it's good to study these paths. It's excellent to study these traditions. Very important. it's good to study even the secret societies and what goes on behind the scenes. And I'm definitely going to study religion and philosophy. I love it. But I'm not going to necessarily, you know, jump into any of these things because I see it as that as another trap. The spirituality, like I said at the end of the Origins and Oracle series that I did, whatever spirituality, whatever yoga, whatever magic, whatever practice that is good is the one that you create for yourself.
I agree wholeheartedly. I guess maybe you misunderstood me. I do not really feel like I need to join any kind of spiritual group or guru to practice detachment. It's almost like imposed on us now. We have to let go of material things. And like you said, Pluto is basically helping us shed all these extras that is, for some, it's very painful. And those who are aware of it already, they can let go much easier. So I think it's already happening whether we like it or not. And this change is upon us already. This whole shifting process is already happening. The detachment process is happening so we can prepare for ascension, for selfhood.
Well, I get it. I agree with you. And I think that if we're talking about detachment and attachment, the way I look at it is a detachment from the false.
Yes.
Is made a lot easier when you're attached to the truth. So detachment is very difficult until you've attached to something that's greater. And what is greater is a man's selfhood. Once a person is committed to looking for that and is examining what that means, then the detachment from all these false modalities and all these false allegiances, you see, becomes much, much more easy. So I feel that it is detachment, but it's also the attachment in a positive way to something that ranks above all the other rubbish that people, you know, unfortunately get themselves involved in.
Yeah, and you talk about Shiva, and so I just love that comparison, and you use Shiva and Pluto in the same sentence as Shiva is, you know, in one of your lectures you talk about how Shiva is really the third of the Trinity, Brahma, the center, Vishnu, the sustainer, Shiva, the destroyer, but also you compare Shiva to human, to us humans. And so what struck me is if you call Shiva us humans, we are that link. Shiva is also the destroyer. Can you go into that a little bit?
It's also probably better semantics to actually refer to Shiva not as the destroyer but as the deconstructor, because of course nothing in the universe is ever really destroyed. There's nothing dead in our cosmos or in our universe. And also I might say that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are basically three aspects of one personality. They're not separate. They're three parts of the same energy. Energy begins, right, takes birth, rises to its peak, and then falls. And this is found on the subatomic level. It's found on the planetary level, and it's certainly found in consciousness, and it's certainly found politically and socially. Civilizations are born. They rise to their peak, and they fall. And this is perfectly natural. It's part of the natural cycle of things. And I also relate Shiva in the Western tradition to the Holy Spirit, just like you were saying, that there's reasons for this. It might be too elaborate to go into, but I have written about it. There is an article that people can read in case we don't cover anything on that subject, but definitely Shiva to me is the third party of the Trinity of the East, of the Aryan of the East. But that translates perfectly into the Trinity of the West when you have the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Again, three aspects of one consciousness, but there is this other third aspect, you see, that was a little bit ambiguously explained in the Bible and in the Christian tradition. They're very hesitant to really tell you what it means, and the reason why they're hesitant is because from the true esoteric point of view, the Holy Spirit, or Shiva in the West, in the Eastern tradition, represents nothing more than the self of a man, man's own selfhood. And knowing this, the clerics and the hierarchs of religion obviously realize that if they work with that Shiva energy, well, then we'll have a true religion. We'd have people who would not be submissive and disempowered, but we would have the teaching that everyone, just like it says in the book of Corinthians, and just like it says in John, just like it said in many scriptures, that man is the temple of the living God. They didn't want to work on that. They knew that their power would be compromised if they told everyone in the world that you are your own priest and your own priestess. So I believe that they then willingly mistranslated not only the every aspect of the Trinity, but specifically the third part. They kind of did not want that circuit to be fully explored and fully understood. They did not want to bring up the question of selfhood. So in the various translations and in the various way that they presented religion to us, it left this out. But in the shamanic tradition and in the true metaphysical mystery school tradition, the self is number one. It's the part that you have to have in place first before there can be any chance of receiving what might be higher up the fractal, like, for instance, the God and the Son of God and all of those other concepts, the Son of God being man's higher self, and the God being, you know, the universal intelligence that created us all and brought us all into being and brought the universe into being. But how can a person ever connect with those realities, with that energy of intelligence, if there's a zero there, if there's a hole in the bucket, you know, so to speak? If the person has no sense of selfhood, how can he possibly be receiving whatever kind of, you know, teachings, truth, and benediction that comes from the higher place? So everything was turned on its head. The idea now is to realize again that every man is in fact his priest, his own priest and his priestess, that other people can only be signposts for you, and that it's a personal relationship with the creator, you know, and with the creatrix that is the key thing. We, again, we need to revisit that. And again, I'm hoping that this age is going to assist in that.
It's deeply embedded in our DNA, and that is my greatest hope and prayer, that each of us will dig deeper and deeper into that DNA message. It is in every human's DNA, if they're halfway still decent humans. I guess they have done an excellent job in destroying or trying to destroy fully that kind of awareness. So that's why I keep asking for optimism here, because, I mean, I feel like that's my calling, too, is to keep that hope and prayer in the people that I come across with and in myself. You know, that we must overcome this, and in the next 3 years, will we have the time to awaken that DNA message?
Oh, there's always time.
Uh-huh.
In fact, none of this actually happens in time as we know it. Like we said at the beginning of the show, you know, our concepts of time have also been tampered with.
Yeah.
Our concepts of duration, our concept of periodicity and cyclical nature. This is stuff that really, if you really want to get into it, you know, it's actually something that happens outside of time.
Yeah.
It's not something that happens in the temporal. The effects may be seen in the world of time, but this is something that happens in the deeper recesses of a person's being that's pretty much timeless, a timeless zone.
True, but in terms of three-dimensional world, you know, counting up to 2012, we're surely on some kind of ascension here that is about to, you know, get us into that breakthrough of that quantum point. In fact, you know, this brings me to that other quote that you used, a quantum researcher, Dr. George Crile, who proved that there is this microscopic photon energy substance in every cell. So he's proving that there is this energy of light that equals in terms of the wave of the sunlight. And so what would be your view on that? How does that tie into the research you've done on selfhood?
Yeah, that's a tremendous quote. Again, coming from the science world, people who realize that within man we have this photonic energy that is both a receiver and a conductor, a transmitter. Deepak Chopra has written about that. Barbara Han Clow wrote about that in her Pleiadian Agenda. Enormously confirmative. We have Bruce Lipton talking about the nature of consciousness, you know, that we're only using such a small part of our waking consciousness, and that we have this entire, you know, consciousness, which people call the unconscious, which is very much tied into what is real, and it's unexplored, you know. So, but again, people need to take it step by step and realize that they are literally the manifestation of the God force on the planet, you know, and not... Basically, the deconstructive model of Shiva just assists people to be able to analyze and make sure that they are defended against all the different voices that may come in to tell a person, you see, that you're little, you're not important, you're powerless, you know, you're a creature of fear, and all of the different kinds of anxieties and stuff that comes up that, again, blocks people from their spiritual awakening. It's not for people to go around and give them anyone spiritual awakening. What we can do is to assist in removing those sort of viruses and those mental infections that stop people realizing their own spirituality and their own, you know, their own particular gifts. This is all a teacher really can do. But it's very, very brilliant to be keeping abreast of all of these different scientific discoveries. This is also going to be increasing. And, of course, you see this coming in every week now, every month now, where there's amazing new discoveries about genes, amazing new discoveries about consciousness, amazing new discoveries about the way that the brain works, you know, and the whole mind-body split, and very, very brilliant stuff. And, of course, I post as much of this stuff as I can on my forum, so people are, you know, welcome to go there and check it out.
Okay. Well, going back to Pluto entering into the house of Capricorn, so what do you envision? Because Capricorn also rules systems. It's also the age of the end of powers in the Mayan calendar, the patriarchal ego-created systems. Do you feel they are imploding from above, or are they falling apart from below? How is this coming together?
Yeah, falling apart from below is the way I look at it. I mean, Pluto is not going to have any effect on anything that's built on truth. When the foundations of something are strong, when there is no crack, when there is no imbalance in something that a person builds or in a person's personality, then you have no problem. All there will be is a certain spring cleaning, a certain releasing of some negative things that exist in people's lives, you know, in their relationships and so on. And that's healthy. There's nothing wrong with that. It's when, as you said, it takes a different octave when it goes into Capricorn, because Capricorn does rule the establishment. Capricorn does rule all of the stuff that has been born out of ego, born out of the sort of master-slave dynamic, and that is based on the ruin of other people, you know, and that is flawed, that is imbalanced. And so just like in the tarot card of the Tower struck with lightning, number 16, that's the message. The message is that do not expect that which is built on rotten foundations to last. It may grow very big. It may cast big shadows. It may, you know, seem very strong and very powerful and phallic. But believe me, you know, the card is telling you, don't worry. These towers of Babel have fallen before, and the message is just get out of the way while they're falling. And that's pretty much what people need to do now. So when there are these threats of meltdown and financial meltdown or changes in the world order, you know, we also have to look at the fact that, you know, maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe this is things that need to change radically because their time is up. Their life cycle is over and they need to go. And instead of being traumatized by it, perhaps there's something good about that kind of change. You know, it's just a matter of interpretation and it's just a matter of people's perspectives.
Yeah, on one of your forums, you said, look at the number 13 card, which represents the death card, and the symbolic horseman is trampling on the body of a king and then about to ride over the body of the pope. So this is incredible symbolism for our current times. In fact, the skeleton is in the winter and represents nature's purification cycle. So based on the Chinese system that I'm familiar with, we're entering a frozen wintry earthy landscape-like scenario in 2000.
Wow.
So the resemblance is pretty profound because yin earth on top of yin earth is quite like the winter landscape, which is kind of frozen earth. It's very hard to plow and grow things in. So what would be your prediction? You know, I am really preparing to try to get people with this program of not have high expectations from 2009, but just sort of plow along as a farmer would on a frozen landscape.
Well, that's amazing.
What would your prediction be for 2009?
Geez, first of all, I had no idea that the Chinese system was saying that. That's very profound. It ties in perfectly with what I've also been seeing. You know, that's really. I'd like to get more information on that. But yes, Pluto, of course, rules the sign of Scorpio, which is traditionally, of course, associated with October and November, which is obviously in the winter cycle, in which you have Celtic feast days like Samhain, you know, and you have also the Day of the Dead in Mexico, and so there's, and Halloween, don't forget. So there's the whole idea of the sun passing into the underworld, which is always connected with the feminine mysteries, the mysteries of the underworld, the mysteries of a great sea change that takes place. And then, of course, what we know, astrology teaches this wonderfully, because of course what lies opposite to the sign of Scorpio is the very physical house of Taurus, which rules earthy practicalities and money making, and again rules of order and establishments, you know, sort of hierarchies and status quo and all of those kinds of things. So there's always been a traditional opposition there between the ruler of Scorpio and the ruler of Taurus. Don't forget also that in the sign of Scorpio is the planet Uranus is exalted. So this brings in then the Aquarian energy, so that one can't talk about Pluto's energy without also talking about its very close brother, Uranus. So when people are talking about the Aquarian age and going on and on and on about the Aquarian age, maybe they should learn something about Aquarius. And that is that the ruler of Aquarius, the planet Uranus, is actually exalted, meaning at its strongest power, in the sign of Scorpio. So this is where the Scorpionic energy that we're under now, with Pluto going into Capricorn, brings with it the energy of Uranus, which is then a prelude of the Aquarian energy, you see. So it's an incredible study there about how these planetary archetypes relate. So wherever you have Pluto energy, you also have Uranian energy. And of course, wherever you have a Uranian energy, you're going to have inventiveness, you're going to have
progressive energy.
Yeah, the progress, and you're going to have the movement towards individualism and also independence in a true sense, breaking free of the chains of the old, which of course can be, as you said in the beginning of the show, very insecure for people. People might be very threatened by that. But ultimately, that's okay. Unfortunately, one has to go through that. That challenge exists even in school, you know, when you're matriculating, let alone on the spiritual path. So going back to the card again, the tarot always brings out more detail about the zodiac. And, of course, you might need a magnifying glass to see it, but if people pull out card 13 of the Rider-Waite deck, you will see this amazing symbol of the skeleton. And the skeleton is nothing negative. It just represents who we all are beneath the surface. This is the real self. The skeleton represents the self. It represents the structure of who we all are. And it also represents Shiva, this catabolic spirit that basically severs or cuts away the dead, you know, because in the tarot before you've got the death card, you have the hangman, which is going back to Buddha under the tree, Jesus crucified on the cross, Odin hanging from the tree of knowledge, you see. So we're dealing with a side of the zodiac here that is very much connected to initiation and to yoga and to purification. So the horse that's shown in the Rider-Waite deck, card 13, is in fact trampling over. If people get the card out and look at it closely, you'll see that it is a bishop, a sort of a clergyman, you know, like with a pope's helmet or hat, and then you have the royal figure. And so these are the Taurian archetypes that existed on the other side of the zodiac, as I said, in Taurus and Aries, which represent kingliness. In Aries, you know, the idea of the established king, warlike, belligerent, extrovert. And then Taurus, representing the Hierophant, the religions of the world. So why do we find the Scorpionic card where they're lying flat on their backs and the horse of truth, you know, the horse of the rider of death is riding above them? Is because that is the symbol of what is happening right now. That Pluto going into Capricorn is all these authorities, these rotten, hierarchical authority figures, you see, being exposed, being dragged down, being thrown aside, losing their power, you know, so that they can be a new way. That's why I say don't hurry people to find out what the new way is. Just concentrate on getting rid of the old way first, and the rest will already make itself known.
It will reveal itself. If you're just joining the show, we're having a great discussion with Michael Tessarian, the great alternative historian and mystic. I urge all you listeners, please visit one of his many informative websites to get more deeply familiar with his teachings, michaeltessarian.com or tarotscopes.com. To start with many, and there's many more. From there, you can travel to his incredible, visually beautiful, and informational domains, such as the High Window articles and the many new video articles that he has put up. So, Michael, in order to go forward with you know, we're racing forward here. I'm sorry, we ran out of, we're fast running out of time, but I'm just asking if you have time in the future, can we continue this conversation?
Sure, no problem. Absolutely. Okay. We had a lot of work to do in the last year, you know, getting our DVD projects finished, but they're out of the way. Okay. So I have a little bit more time for, you know, interviews, and I'd definitely love to come back on your show and talk more about these matters. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you also predicted in 2006 that Pluto, of course, just got done visiting the Galactic Center. And this, of course, I'm looking at it from the Mayan calendar's point of view, which also has predicted that we are coming into that heart chakra, you know, bringing out the love, bringing out that oneness energy. And so I don't know if you felt it, but I think many, many humans are starting to feel this downloaded in a greater and greater amount, this love energy rising. I felt it since about the fall of 08. So while this Pluto cleansing is happening, at the same time we're seeing that the mask is being, you know, it's like it's facilitated to be taken off in a way. And this helps us to return to selfhood and really have better respect for each other. Do you have that feeling?
Yeah, I do. I think that the Uranian energy will definitely bring that in. Pluto's energy is more like the reaper, you know, has the scythe to cut away and burn up all the dead leaves and to uproot all the dead weeds. And then that just that emptiness, that sense of now that the old has been removed and the toxic has been removed, you know, is a tremendous spiritual state on its own. And so a lot of people will come to that. They won't know exactly where they're going. They won't know exactly what to plant again. You know, as you said, it's a winter cycle. It's not time for planting again. It's enjoying that space. You know, I always think of the work of one of my favorite artists, which is Bruegel, the elder. The Flemish artist, you know, and the beautiful scapes that he painted, which show the snow, and they're always from a high position looking down on a sort of a urban setting or in a village setting, and just that sense of space.
Well,
and
that
scope.
Was during the mini ice age, I guess, in the 14th century or so, when Europe.
Yeah, that's right. They claim they had a mini ice age in Europe at that time.
Yeah.
But the beauty of his perspective and the tremendous love that you can see in those canvases. This tremendous compassion that he has, you know, in this perspective, which is you find also in Van Gogh's work, of course, and a few other artists. But in Bruegel especially, you know, you sense that immense compassion for the overview of what is happening historically, what is happening in consciousness.
Well, I love that you use this little quote, the Hopi quote, the emergence to the future fifth world has begun. Is being made by the humble people of little nations, tribes, and racial minorities. This is a wonderfully hopeful quote because seeing that little people from little places, places that are kind of forgotten or disregarded, they're the ones really who are making some real forward steps towards unity.
Yeah, there are. There are many libertarian movements throughout the world. There's many grassroots people throughout the world. The whole of this alternative research community is not about experts. It's all about individuals collaborating. I've seen that a lot. In fact, a great deal of my work is based on collaboration in the sense that people, just like you've described, are sending me material from all over the world. They get turned on by what I'm doing, and then they, you know, they see areas that I could know more, and they send me information. Go here. Here's what's happening in my backyard, or here's a piece of information you don't seem to, you know, have in your work. Can I share it with you? You know, and in fact, some of the websites I have the appendices pages there are filled with this stuff that people have sent me, and I even have web pages that I put there updates constantly, almost every day, from the work that I get. You know, and other people I work with. Like the Red Ice team, you know, in Sweden, they are also doing that. It's constantly featuring the good, coherent stuff that other people are sending us. So this is not about hierarchy. It's about holarchy. It's about working together, you know, in a way that where there isn't any of this, what you call ego battling or, you know, not butting heads together about who's the expert and who knows what. You still get this, of course, but those people are idiots. You know, they haven't understood yet what's really going on. They're all jostling for position, wanting to be the big know-it-all, the big boss hog. You know, but this is an esoteric, spiritual, occult area. You can't have boss hogs. This is the Arthurian round table in which everybody who sits there, you know, no one is higher or lower than another. And there's still people who need to, you know, work with that to understand that paradigm. They're still trying to come to this alternative work, dragging the whole academic palava behind them, all that toxic stuff that, you know, needs to go. They're still trying to drag it all into even this sphere of study. And that's not going to work. They're going to learn their lesson pretty soon. Mm-hmm. It's not about that. It's about everybody collaborating and bringing in all the different elements so that, you know, the newcomer, the person who's coming to this for the first time, has an enormous amount of information that they can get interested in and look into and also find their own place
mm-hmm. most importantly, in the holarchy, everybody has a value. You know, this is what Professor Tolkien was showing in The Lord of the Rings, and they brought that out well in the movie, which is that the smallest of creatures, you know, the smallest mm-hmm. part of society, mm-hmm. not magicians, not great kings, not great stewards, not great sorcerers or occultists, but a very small person, a very insignificant, you know, hobbit, has the power to destroy universal evil.
Yeah,
has the power to overcome.
One young friend of mine put it this way, we're like moss, M-O-S-S, that just kind of grows over the decaying system. I think that's a very nice metaphor. What other thoughts do you have regarding this crazy economical roller coaster? What would be your comment on that?
Well, I don't buy into it at all. It's all manufactured.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows anything about the Federal Reserve or anything like that realizes that even if they had an Amero that replaces the rubbish we've got now, nothing has changed. This is just traumata. This is just constant infusion of traumata in order to make people that you really have. You imagine that any nation today actually has a solvent currency?
Mm.
I mean, hasn't David Icke and Eustace Mullins and G. Edward Griffin and so many other teachers gone blue in the face telling people that your money isn't worth anything, even if you call it a pound or a dollar or a shekel, or you call it a franc or a mark or a kroner? I mean, there's nothing there. It's all entries in a computer anyway. And it makes me laugh. It makes me want to almost cry that people are going, oh, we must hold on to our dollar. What is happening? Wait a minute. The thing is worthless anyway. You might as well hold up some paper money. And if Big Brother wants to move the dollar that they've created, they want
to
move that out and bring in...
You don't think they're going to just do away with it overnight, like in a few months' time? It's just
they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that.
They're not going to just drag it out endlessly?
No. See, it's not that they... Remember, if they had their way, they'd do it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. These boys don't want to wait. They just are very clever. They know that they have to do it patiently because they've got a lot of critics. They've got a lot of people even within the political system who don't buy into that, who don't want that. They have people who were not voted in right away, you see. So just to keep the smokescreen of democracy... they'll go slow because remember all tyrannies are voted in, Elizabeth. Never forget that.
I'm so sorry. Our short hour is up, and I feel deeply blessed that we could talk, Michael. And I do hope we could continue this dialogue. And thank you again so much for your time.
Yeah, I'll be glad to do it again. I'm glad to be on your show.
Great pleasure.
Thanks a lot for the time.
Continued protection and success with your work and life journey.
All right. Same to you, my dear. Thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it.
I appreciate that. Friends, let's finish this incredible time today with the usual gratitude intent. I'm grateful, and I know now that there is nothing that I could ever desire that is not at this very moment standing at the door of my consciousness, ready to appear in my life and affairs. I have only to be conscious of this truth, and every need is met, every problem solved, every question answered. My consciousness of the holy self within is all I will ever need for eternity. And so it is. Dear friends, our next live show will air on Wednesday, January 21st, 2009 at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. I will have the great honor to welcome back Barbara Hand-Cloud to discuss day 6 of the Mayan calendar in greater detail. Please mark your calendars for another important discussion. You can also check my web pages for details on upcoming shows. I'm also uploading some of the current and past shows, and you can listen to those on my website at redlotus.org. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Elizabeth, checking out. Until we meet again next time, have a blessed, love-filled, abundant 2009, everyone. Blessed be all.